Good morning.
Good morning.
Between sliding around on the ice to get here and that, I didn't need coffee. Okay. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am, as I think most of you know, Prairie's part-time minister, Sandy Ingham. We welcome you here, no matter where you are on this life journey, no matter your ethnicity, no matter your gender, no matter your sexual orientation, no matter your abilities, your disabilities, color of your hair, so on and so forth, you are welcome no matter where you are. If this is one of your first times here, we hope that you will come back for at least one more Sunday, because Sunday morning services are very different usually each Sunday. I don't know who wrote these words, but these are the opening words, and they're some of my favorites. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. Rachel, would you like the chalice, please? Thank you. May the light around us guide our footsteps and hold us fast to the best and most righteous that we seek. May the darkness around us nurture our dreams and give us rest so that we may give ourselves to the work of the world. Let us seek to remember the wholeness of our lives, the weaving of light and shadow in this great and astonishing dance in which we move. The reading I want to share with you is a little bit from a book called Humanist Voices in Unitarian Universalism, part of a series that some of you may be familiar with, Blank Voices in Unitarian Universalism. There's one of Pagan Voices. I think there's one coming out, Christian Voices, but highly recommend the Humanist one. And the editors of the book wrote this, what I'm going to share with you right now. The editors are William Murray and Kendall Gibbons, both Unitarian Universalist ministers, both religious humanists. Mm-hmm. Humanists agree on many things, but humanism includes a variety of aspects, and it means different things to different people, depending on which aspect a particular humanist chooses to emphasize. Amid this diversity, the contributors to this book agree, and this is, I think I used this at the top of your order of service. The editors to this book agree that humanism is not primarily about denying the existence of the supernatural, but about affirming positive values, especially the worth and dignity of every human being, the centrality of social justice, and the importance of community. They also agree that humanism leads to a way of living that is morally responsible, meaningful, and joyful, and that seeks to make the world a better place. The authors, that would be the authors of the essays in this book, totally reject the erroneous idea that humanists are immoral and irresponsible. We could substitute the word atheist there in that sense, as far as I'm concerned. In a sermon, Nancy McDonald Ladd, minister of the River Road Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Bethesda, Maryland, offered a valuable distinction between the theistic and the humanist perspectives. She noted that the Unitarian Universalist Christian minister, Carl Scovell, wrote that, quote, "the great surmise was simply this, that at the heart of all creation lies a good intent, a purposeful goodness from which we come, by which we live our fullest and to which we shall at last return, and that this deep well of purposeful goodness is the supreme reality of our lives Now, Scovell's words represent a beautiful and accurate statement of the central meaning of the Christian faith. Ladd, however, offered her own view, and although she does not use the word humanism, her ideas are a superb statement of a humanist perspective. Ladd writes, "Lately I have pondered a different surmise, not to live as if we are loved beyond measure, but to live as if we ourselves are capable of loving beyond measure, no matter what. Can I prove this is true? No. Most of the evidence probably points to the contrary, in fact. I cannot prove, Ladd writes, that we are capable of loving beyond measure, even in the direst of circumstances. But I choose to live as if it is possible." The words to the hymn that we sang a few minutes ago, what I like to call the meditative hymn, in this case number 93, "To Mercy, Pity, Peace, and Love," the words are by William Blake, and they were written sometime between 1757 and 1827, more than 100 years before the original Humanist Manifesto, which was written in 1933. And yet, this is a completely humanist hymn to me. There's no mention of a deity. There's mention of the divine, but not necessarily in the form of a deity. "Oh, what a piece of work are we," our opening hymn, also intrigues me from a humanist perspective. Now, I have to admit that I avoided using this hymn for a long time because every time I read the title, I cracked up. What a piece of work so-and-so is. I don't know if that's still a familiar phrase, but it's one familiar to me. But it might have been you, Penny, who chose it one Sunday many, many months ago. And I looked at those words carefully, and I realized what a humanist song it is, especially verse 3, quote, "But give us room to move and grow, but give our spirit play, and we can make a world of light out of the common clay." Out of the common clay. And there you have it, just in that one sentence, why I became a humanist and why I remain a humanist. Actually, there's a little more to it. Part of the reason that I consider myself to be a humanist is because of the humanists whom I have known over the years in Unitarian Universalist congregations, especially in my early years as a UU, those early years at First Unitarian Society right here in Madison, right down the street. And of course, my first introduction to a humanist was the Reverend Dr. Max Gabler at First Unitarian. But I remain a humanist because I still firmly believe that we humans have made the messes in the world, and thus are the logical, perhaps the only beings that can clean up the messes, whether or not there is a deity somewhere rooting for us or hindering us. However, I am not the same humanist I was almost 45 years ago now. If asked 40 plus years ago whether I was a secular humanist or a religious humanist, I probably would have said that I was a secular humanist because, like many of you in this room, I was so afraid of that word religious. But now I would describe myself as a religious humanist. I have doubts about humanism, but that's probably a healthy thing. I have doubts about the power of humanism and whether or not it can really make a difference in this world in the 21st century. My doubts and reservations about being a humanist can be partially explained by two words, hubris and humility. Humility, the dictionary tells us, is the quality or state of being humble, from Greek words meaning earth and on the ground. Humble as an adjective means not proud or haughty, not arrogant or assertive, unpretentious. That wouldn't always be my definition of Unitarian Universalists, myself included. Humble as a verb means to destroy the power, independence, or prestige of, to make humble in spirit or manner. And I will say, because I don't believe in having an elephant in the living room any more than we have to, I have had a humbling experience in the last few weeks and months. Hubris. Dictionary tells us that that means exaggerated pride or self-confidence, often resulting in retribution. We're not getting into Shakespeare today. This congregation, Prairie, prides itself on being a humanist congregation. How many of you in this room would probably describe yourself as a humanist? Forget the secular religious distinctions for now. When the search committee interviewed me for this position 7 years ago, they made it very clear, that the minister they chose had to be a humanist. I had no problems with that, and I still don't. What does it mean to be a humanist? More precisely, what does it mean to be a humanist within the context of Unitarian Universalism? One dictionary definition of humanism calls it a doctrine, an attitude, a way of life centered on human interests or values, especially a philosophy that usually rejects supernaturalism and stresses an individual's dignity and worth and capacity for self-realization through reason. This definition sounds as if it came right out of our purposes and principles, especially that first principle where we covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But how did we Unitarians and Universalists get here to humanism? Humanists and humanism, they've been around a very, very long time, well before the Renaissance, and almost always going against the grain of the prevailing culture, especially in the religious sphere. Unitarian Universalist minister Jack Mendelsohn, in his book Being Liberal in an Illiberal Age, another book I highly recommend, traces humanism back to 450 before the Common Era, BCE, when a man named Protagoras, I don't know if this is the same Protagoras whose theorem was drummed into me at some point, Protagoras spoke out against that era's, quote, unintelligible popular theology, unquote. Protagoras said, as for the gods, I do not know whether they exist or not. Life is too short for such difficult inquiries. Humans are the measure of all things. For this proclamation, and I suspect other transgressions, Protagoras was exiled from Greece. He tried to find haven in Sicily, and he was lost at sea. His books were burned in the public square. We sure know a lot of people, our ancestors in thought, who had their books burned. Today, he is considered the pioneer humanist, and his definition of humanism remains the classical one. Faith, thought, and action are the domain and responsibility of the human, not the supernatural. How did we Unitarian Universalists get here to being a predominantly humanist faith in this tradition? Are we still so dominant in our congregations? Well, I did a little informal survey on that one among my colleagues, but I'll get back to that. Over roughly the past 2.5 centuries, since before the Revolutionary War in this country, free-thinking people, many of whom were or became Unitarians or Universalists, wrestled with these questions. What is the purpose of religion? What is the nature of God, capital G, of course? Are humans responsible for what happens, for everything? Did that capital G God, if there is one, create and then depart, leaving us to figure it all out? Humanist thought is intertwined with the history of the free thinkers. That probably won't surprise you. The concept of God evolved from God as powerful being, male, of course, who gave rewards to those worthy of them and punished sinners, harshly in some cases, that God that many of us associate with the Old Testament God, but always, always through this evolution of what God is, always there was that pushback from us, the free thinkers. The history of this evolution in how we think about God and religion might seem irrelevant to you, but it isn't. It is important to remember and to be grateful always for our religious heritage, even though it takes some imagination to grasp how difficult it was for people who came to this country so they could express whatever religion, well, not really whatever religion they wanted to, but a different religion from that in Europe, those in Europe, I should say. And if you think about it, it is still difficult to go against the establishment. Try being a Christian in some countries in the Middle East or Africa or Asia. Try being certain kinds of Muslims in certain parts of the world, like the United States. On our side, especially the Unitarian side of our history, William Ellery Channing, who has been called the father of Unitarianism in this country. Channing gave a sermon in 1819 criticizing our friend John Calvin. By now you surely know who John Calvin was. I leave you with nothing else when I leave. Oh dear, that's terrible. I'm leaving you with John Calvin. I hope I'm leaving you with some important Unitarian and Universalist people too. But Channing maintained that the Bible was not the literal word of God, and that believing in the Trinity was irrational, and if, as I have mentioned more than once in here, there is no mention of the Trinity in the Bible. And my dear mother found that out and was a good Presbyterian, and it isn't in there. No, it isn't in there. Of course, this was very radical for that time in the early 1800s, talk about the unity of God. Channing's sermon was published in a pamphlet, and did you know, no, you probably didn't, that that pamphlet became the second most widely circulated pamphlet in our history, I mean the history of the United States. The first pamphlet, Thomas Paine's Common Sense. But way back then, in the early 1800s, Channing was planting the seeds, laying the groundwork for the humanist movement, as were all his friends and his buddies and a lot of the clergy. And sure enough, as if Channing's work wasn't upsetting enough to the establishment, shortly thereafter, really, not long after that, came the Transcendentalist movement. Another challenge to established religion. So the first controversy in our history was Channing and the Congregationalists who left the Congregationalist Church to become Unitarians. But the second big controversy was the Transcendentalist controversy when Emerson and many, many others, Margaret Fuller, one of them, had the audacity to declare that God isn't all that important. We can find the divine through nature, greatly simplifying here, of course, and that what is most important in our lives is self-realization, self-improvement. God is not necessarily revealed through the Bible or through ministers. The third major controversy in our history was the humanist movement in the early 20th century. I'm really not going to give you a quiz, but I have to mention the names of the big three radicals at that time, the anti-establishment Unitarian ministers, John Dietrich, Curtis Rees, and Charles Porter. As I mentioned earlier, the first Humanist Manifesto was written in 1933. I remind you again of how important it is to try to place ourselves within the time period we're talking about. Consider that year, 1933, for just a moment, when that Humanist Manifesto was written. 1933, the United States was in the midst of the Great Depression, capital G, capital D. And also keep in mind that that document was written not very long after the end of World War I, the war to end all wars. I'm immersed in Jacqueline Winspear's books about World War I. They're mysteries, but the best mysteries are all about history and people, and I don't recall anybody actually being killed yet. The audacity and the courage of the people who wrote that first Humanist Manifesto astounds me. How could they be optimistic after World War I and during such difficult economic times? big leap of time here. By 1967, many, but not necessarily most, but many Unitarian Universalists were in agreement that the term God did not designate a tangible supernatural being. That was only 52 years ago, relatively short period of time in the overall scheme of things. And a mere 30, 35 years later, by the turn of the century and into the early 2000s, there was more and more acceptance in Unitarian Universalist congregations of atheists, agnostics, and both secular and religious humanists. As Unitarian Universalist minister Forrest Church said at General Assembly in 2003, when people tell me proudly that, and believe me, we get this a lot, you ministers, when people tell me proudly that they don't believe in God, capital G, I ask them to tell me a little about the God they don't believe in, for I probably don't believe in him either. God, capital G, is not small letter G. God is not God's name. God is our name for that which is greater than all and yet present in each. One of the latest battles in our, oh, this could be the fourth controversy right here in the times we're living in. The ongoing humanist theist debate. Are our congregations becoming too theistic? Too much God talk? This, believe it or not, has been called our fourth controversy. In 2003, Bill Sinkford, then president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, said that perhaps our association should try to reverse its course away from what he called the language of reverence and begin to, his words again, name the holy. Was he saying that we should start using traditional language as an expectation of membership? No, he wasn't. But unfortunately, his words, as often happens, got twisted by the media, taken out of context, front page article in the Houston, I think, in a Houston newspaper, saying that, among other things, Sinkford proposed adding the word God, capital G, to our principle. Maybe so that Unitarian Universalism could appeal to, quote, more mainstream believers, unquote. Well, eventually that controversy died down, and Sinkford, who's a wonderful person, was able to better explain what he meant and where he might be trying to go with his own beliefs. But the incident was useful in drawing attention to how confused we are about our identity. It's one of our ongoing biggest problems and biggest challenges. The elevator speech became very popular again around this time, where you're stuck in an elevator with your name tag on from General Assembly or some meeting that says Unitarian Universalist, and other people get on. What's that? What's a Unitarian Universalist? And you get to pick what floor this happens on, but you have a limited amount of time to explain Unitarian Universalism. The question remains, is there a fourth controversy going on right now? For me, being a religious humanist means being open-minded and realistic, but not totally and not all the time. To be a humanist is to be a believer in the scientific method, a rational thinker, okay, but not totally and not all the time. For a humanist, the point of life as we know it right now is to be all that we can be. And I've always thought it was a shame that the Army co-opted that phrase. The point of life is to fulfill our potential, which will be different with each of us. That should be obvious, but we don't always act as if it is. And this being a humanist involves imagination, creativity, openness to possibilities, a recognition that each one of us is beautiful and important. Being a humanist involves being joyful, laughing, and doing all that we can to help others realize their full potential so that they can be all that they can be without going into the Army, maybe. As a religious humanist, I pledge to imagine the unimaginable, just as Beekle did in the story. What is unimaginable? Well, take your pick. You could all make your own list. An atheist elected president of the United States. That would be unimaginable. A world without war. A world beyond war. Shelter, food, clothing, jobs for all of the world's refugees fleeing all those many places. Prison reform. Black lives mattering for real. Transgendered people respected and cherished by everyone. I am a humanist. I have to imagine the unimaginable. And this, for me, is where the sacred, the religious, enters into the equation and makes me a religious humanist, as opposed to a secular one. Despite the ifs, ands, and buts, and the maybes of life, I am a humanist who tries to look at what is and go on from there, because I am also a humanist who immediately leaps to what if and why not. To make this leap requires a certain amount of faith in humanity. And making this leap takes me out of the purely rational. So perhaps I am a humanist with not doubts, not reservations exactly, but a humanist with an openness to possibilities. I have to recognize that there are things in this world that are not rational, subject to reason. Now, that doesn't mean that someday they'll become, they might become rational. Science keeps, whatever it does, going on. There are parts of our existence that are mysterious. There are moments in life that are beyond comprehension, that move us to such sorrow. So grief comes to my mind when talking about the not necessarily rational parts of life. Love is a classic example. That's not rational. But there are moments in life when we think that we'll never be able to go on. We're so full of sorrow or anger. But then there are moments in life that make us laugh and delight us. And if we are very fortunate individuals, there are moments of pure joy in our lives. 2 weeks ago, my dearest friend in the world died. And he was 90, and it wasn't unexpected. But you always have hope, as long as someone's still breathing, right? I'd never experienced that kind of grief. So he died on a Thursday night, evening. Friday morning, early morning, middle of the night, I woke up laughing. I had a dream about laughing. And there were all sorts of people in it, some I recognized. You know how dreams are. Some were composites of people. And of course, Walter, my friend, was there. I didn't know he had died. And then that was the first thing I found out when I woke up. That's not rational. I cannot deny the religious parts of life, but let me remind you of what I mean by the word religion, and you know I stole this from Forrester Church. Religion is our human response to the dual reality of being alive and having to die. The Unitarian Universalist Humanist Association says this about being religious. We are religious in that we share with most Unitarian Universalists the natural human desires for a beloved and accepting community, a purpose greater than ourselves, rituals and practices that resonate with our common humanity and shared mortality, and opportunities to work with other tough-minded, warm-hearted people to do good in the world and to help one another attain the greatest possible fulfillment in life. There's a man named Paul Reiser, who is a contemporary theologian. He's well-known in theological circles, like we all move in theological circles. But he does happen to be a Unitarian Universalist. And he's wrestling with this problem of the identity of Unitarian Universalists. But I appreciate what he's come up with, three core values that might help us fill our void around identity. And here they are: spiritual freedom. And again, you have to define spiritual however you want to define it, but I have to define it in terms of not the supernatural. So three core values: spiritual freedom, social justice, and interdependence. I mentioned that I had done a very informal survey. There were only three people, but they all responded right away, which was amazing, because they're all really busy people. They're people I went to Star King School for the Ministry with. And I asked them if they thought that humanists still comprise a large percentage of most UU congregations. Put another way, do you think that the majority of our congregations would consider themselves to be primarily humanists? Now, all three of these people have been in UU ministry for 20 plus years, and one of them has worked for the UUA all those years, but I promised they wouldn't give their names out. So my dear friend, who almost thought that was slip, has a large congregation actually in Northern Virginia, right outside of DC, and one of the few women, can you believe this? She's one of the few women in our denomination who has a big church. She says, having just completed a survey of my congregation, I can say, and she's been there for almost 10 years, I can say we are 65% humanists with naturalist theism. This is a big church, big to us, 600-800 members. 65% humanists with natural theism and pantheism tying for second place at 20% each. That really surprised me. Doesn't surprise me. And atheism came in third. My humanists are friendly, tolerant, and downright accepting of diversity. I can just hear her saying that. I've not received one complaint in 21 years of ministry, yet the Christians, Buddhists, pagans, and so on claim their identity with equal measure of appreciation for the others. Another friend who did parish ministry for 20 plus years said, interesting question, I'm wondering why you're asking. Here's my take. I think most UU congregations are more theologically pluralistic than they realize, and for some, more so than they want. For a faith more focused on how we live rather than the content of our theology, I'm not sure why it matters. That said, I would guess that most of our congregations are majority humanists of some sort, not necessarily atheistic or agnostic humanists. And then my favorite, from the person who's worked at the UUA. This is what I want to say to the humanists. You won. Move in. Liberal Christians in our movement are liberal humanist Christians. Atheists are humanists. UU Buddhists are humanists. Humanism has so become a part of our movement, it doesn't mean one thing or look one way. Will we choose to act out of humility, to be humble humanists? I think that would be wise of us. Not proud, not arrogant, acting like we have all the answers, because we do act that way, you know. Because we do have all, no. Will we choose to be humble, act out of humility, thankful for life, full of joy for our humanity, with enough room in our joy and our thankfulness and our humility for those who are not pure humanists? I am a humanist. I have to imagine the unimaginable. And that for me is where the sacred and the religious enters into the equation. So I am being a humanist who immediately leaps to what if and why not. I make the pledge, despite or maybe because of the state of the world. I make it with sadness because of the state of the world, knowing how far short of its loftiest goals humanity has come thus far. But more importantly, I continue to make my pledge to humanism with joy and optimism, always recognizing the possibility of possibilities yet unknown. All right, hang on to your hats for the closing words. See if I can do this. These were written by Bob, you might recognize this name, or maybe several of you will. Donald Summerfield. I was president of the Humanist Society a long time ago, I think, maybe. Anyway, this was published in the January-February issue 2015 of The Humanist, and it is titled Yes and Maybe. If you are, if I am, if we can, if you do, if we don't, if you want, if we fall, if we rise, what then? Kiss this night with our ifs, maybes, with yes and but, with insolence and incongruity, with a chapter yet to be read across your indefatigable life, the fealty of mine framed in this kindred restlessness of some other deeper place, this forest, this ancient sanctuary of thought and reason, sensuality, tumult where passion resides, reject the all-encompassing, all-consuming great lie, toss aside the sky daddy mythology, jump the abyss with me, find new meaning in the journey, not old wounds, if maybe we will shape the world with our hands, if yes, we cannot lose the depth and breadth of humanity, say it is so, say it is so. Blessed be. Go in peace, greet your neighbor, drink coffee.